Hey everyone, and welcome to the High Vibe Tribe. I have a very good friend with me today, and I'm so excited because she's coming all the way from Melbourne, Australia. And her name is Sandy Lowries. Sandy, how are you?
Hello, Marcy, my friend. I'm well. How are you?
I'm actually thrilled because you're here. And we have been waiting to do this for such a long time. I thought that what we would do is to begin by telling everyone how we met. Do you want to tell the story? Or do you want me to?
Oh, I'm happy for you to tell the story because it's lovely.
So this was, well, let's both tell it because I'm sure we'll have to fill in the pieces, right, for everybody. But I believe it was it 2 or 3 years ago, Sandy?
I think maybe 3 years ago.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah.
3 years ago, and it was at the Victoria Gardens in Melbourne, I attended a women's march. And at the time, it was really just sort of catching on, wasn't it, Sandy?
Yeah, so they've been doing it here for a few years, but it started to get sort of bigger and bigger. And I think the year that you joined, there was a really huge surge of women who had sort of joined this annual march.
So anyway, we were, I don't even know, thousands of women, and women from all walks of life, women there with different ideals, different intentions. But it was so clear that every woman there was on a mission. And I think the mission was really just about coming together as women. And
yeah,
to connect in such a vibrant way, right? Where women were so open to sharing who they are, sharing their life stories. I know I met so many women, and it was amazing to me because on many levels, it would appear like everyone had their own story, right? But the truth was that underneath all of that, we had the same story.
Yeah, I agree. I think that there was such an incredible sort of vibe. And I think a number of things were changing in the world, obviously, Me Too, et cetera, where women started to feel that they could share all of their stories, great stories. They could bring their wisdom to the front and talk about their stories, but also talk about their hard-won sort of knowledge and their pain that they had come through and who we are as women, and collectively kind of come together. It was like a huge collective, amazing hug.
Oh, it was incredible. And there were some wonderful, wonderful speakers. And that's actually how I met Sandy, because Sandy was working with someone who was a speaker that day. And I happened to have approached her also with the intention of interviewing her for my podcast at the time. And Sandy and I just, well, it was kind of like love at first sight. We just connected. We connected in such a strong way. And that connection has just continued to grow and grow and grow. And of course, every time I'm in Melbourne, I make certain that we get together, and you too. You know, we always make a point of getting together and reconnecting. But thank God, you know, through social media, we've been able to stay very much connected with what's happening in our lives, which kind of brings us here today for me to introduce you to Sandy in a completely different way. Outside of being my friend and this incredible woman and so full of life and an incredible visionary, Sandy is also the woman behind the WB40, WB40. And what that stands for is Women Beyond 40. And it's an incredible platform. She has a website, a podcast, and a magazine, and it's for women beyond the age of 40, a celebration of hard-won wisdom And we have worked hard for that wisdom, haven't we?
We certainly have.
Yeah.
We certainly have.
And so there are women there who are writing for women on topics that are of interest to the sisterhood. And it also creates opportunities for the stories of women to be told. And that's exactly what I experienced that day when I first attended the Women's March. And so Sandy is the founder and the creative director of WB40. And she's also the host of the podcast, The Good Girl Confessional. She's a social entrepreneur, and she has a passion for women's issues and helping other women to rise. She lives in Melbourne, but I think at this point I would say that you're very much of a global citizen. Wouldn't you, Sandy?
Oh, thank you so much, Marcy. I would say yes. So Melbourne is my home and I'm very passionate about this city, but absolutely. And part of my platform is really about being open to meeting people from all over the world and hearing the stories of women from all over the world. So absolutely, I think we should all think of ourselves as global citizens. You know, regardless of where we happen to lay our head at night, we're all part of this beautiful world.
Yes, we are. And I know one of the things that you take very seriously, and the women who are with you, you know, sharing their stories in various ways on your platforms, is that, as I said earlier, we seem to be on these individual journeys. And yet, underneath it all, there is clearly, I think, this shared intention of when we come together, it is in recognition that there is a sisterhood. And it's a sisterhood that is there to give support and strength to each other. And what I love so much about what you're doing is I know that you are creating this safe community for diverse women to come together and to really, how can I say it? Just to shine, to be who they are, whether it's in the sharing of their gifts, sharing of their stories, sharing of their wisdom, sharing of their creativity. It's just the most amazing thing when we come together in such a platform as that which you've created and clearly have the freedom to be us.
I couldn't agree more, and I think you've summed it up so beautifully. One of the most mind-blowing things for me in starting the platform was actually being able to talk to so many amazing, diverse, varied women from so many different backgrounds, from so many different cultures, with so many different ideals. And you're 100% right, Marcy. The one thing that has always resonated for me and was the driving force for me was this sense of sisterhood, and that what I innately understand, and I think most of us do, when women come together and when we support one another and when we help each other and when we listen to each other, kind of incredible things start to happen. And WB40, although it started out as my baby, has kind of become a platform built by so many women because they are the people sharing their stories with such truth and honesty. And they are the people who are resonating with those that are listening to the podcast or those that will read their stories. Every woman out there wants to feel that they're heard. We want to feel that we belong to something greater than ourselves. And at the very heart of what I'm trying to do, I guess, is to build a community of like-minded women. Now, like-minded doesn't mean that we all have the same ideas. Like-minded means we all want to see good in the world. We all want to see things changing for the better, not just for women, but for everyone. And I think it's just been such a joy to be able to collaborate with so many extraordinary women. Like yourself, Marcy, I mean, I think, you know, to have so many women who are open and honest and give of themselves and give with their heart and are very generous of spirit has been an absolute joy for me.
So tell me something. When women initially come to the platform, do you think that they have that same intention in mind, or is it something that they sort of uncover within themselves? And the reason I'm asking this is that I've had a recent conversation with someone, and she happened to mention to me, she said, "Marcy, I love talking with you. I always feel so free." And I was thinking about that and thinking about, first off, the comment was, you know, such an honor, right, for me to be told that. But I was also thinking about, why would we ever not be free? Why would we ever not feel free when talking with other women?
That's such a beautiful point and such a great question that you asked as well. I would say that a lot of women, a lot of us, you know, are bound by this kind of societal patriarchal kind of form that we're, you know, communities that we're raised in, and family values play into that as well. But there seems to be and has always been a collective view that women shouldn't talk openly and honestly about their feelings, about our anatomy, about our autonomy, about our intelligence, about our success. And I think that that continues through today. I do think there is a reluctance for so many women to talk about their truth, and especially those that have been through trauma or pain, or that it's almost like we're supposed to be, and I put this in inverted commas, good girls, that we're supposed to be quiet, that we're supposed to be submissive, and we're meant to just smile, be pretty, and carry on. And I do think you're right when people come to say exactly that, the platform. So when they come to be on the podcast, the Good Girl Confessional, and I will say the name for the Good Girl Confessional came about, it was originally a blog that I had done since 2013. And the name was really a tongue-in-cheek view of exactly that, that women are expected to be good girls. And I wanted to create an environment, and which is why I called it the confessional, if you like, that people could come in and just tell their truth, speak honestly and openly. So when I ceased to have it as a blog and it became a podcast, and I knew and my intention was very clear, I knew that I wanted it to be for other women to tell their stories. This wasn't my story, because collectively we all have so many stories. And while I'm always open and honest and happy to share mine, I was really, really interested in the thoughts and views of other women who were doing like amazing things beyond the age of 40, beyond the age of 50, beyond the age of 60. So I think you're right, Marcy. When they first come to the podcast, often it's to talk about one thing in particular. You know, perhaps they've written a book, or perhaps they've got this amazing business, or perhaps they're doing different things. And generally what does happen in the confessional is that people, you know, we just kind of are free to be who exactly who we are. And it has happened on numerous occasions where women have said, "Oh, I didn't mean to tell you all of that. I don't know where that came from." But that's kind of the real beauty of what we do, what you do as well, Marcy, is creating a safe space for women to tell those stories, to share a little bit more of their soul, not just this mask or this outside veneer that we put on for the world.
And I think that's such a good point. It's so funny, as you were speaking, I had this image of this woman in a, you know, very constricting sort of business suit, right? Very prim and proper, walking into the confessional and walking out with, you know, like everything off, and wings have sprouted in her back and just flying off into the horizons. And I imagine, Sandy, that that's not so far off from what women really feel when they come off your podcast, because it's the one thing I know you and I from the very beginning. It was like we had known each other our whole lives, right? And we're talking like, nitty gritty. We're in there and just talking solely from our hearts. And it's what I love so much about what you're doing, creating that platform. And I know you. I know how open you are and how your own life experiences have sort of molded you into being able to be that safe place for any woman at all. And how beautiful it is that you've brought that to the public, giving voice to so many other women. So I really want to applaud you for that, but we need to like make a little video of this woman going into the confessional.
Well, first of all, I'm really honored that you would say all those beautiful things. And thank you, Marcy. I think when I met you, as you say, it was like love at first sight. It was just an instant, you know, coming together as if we'd been friends for, as you say, many, many, many years. And it still feels that way.
Yeah.
When I look back and I said, when you were asking before, is it 2 or 3 years? I was like, that seems so strange to me because it feels like forever.
I know.
But you're right. You know, it was a coming together of, you know, just two open people, I think. And we just talked and talked and talked, and we told our stories and continue to tell our stories. And I think that's sort of a really beautiful thing. And I hope that that is how women feel when they come on my podcast as well, as I feel here, that they can tell their truth or that they can kind of disarm themselves a little bit from the outside world. And so, yes, while I invite really interesting women onto this podcast to talk about projects they're working on or a book that they've written, I've had a lot of advocates on there as well. So they're advocating for change in the disability sector or change, you know, the cancer survivors. And what I hope is that through the course of being on the podcast, yes, they come on to talk about one thing, but that they feel then relaxed and they start to open up about other things. And that does happen quite often. I would say 9 times out of 10, because people start to feel they can show that more human side of them and show that vulnerability, knowing that they are in a safe space.
Which is so important. But let's get back to that whole societal thing, because, you know, I know for myself, and I'm a bit older than you are, but you know, the society that I grew up in very much had an image that they expected me to conform to. And I'm certain that, you know, you were subject to that as well. And I know for myself, and it's so funny that, you know, your platform is, or that your podcast is, you know, Confessions of a Good Girl. When I used to say when I first got divorced that I was a recovering good girl. I was totally in recovery. And I remember feeling this sense of complete freedom. But you know what, Sandy? I didn't know who I was.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that there is quite a lot of that. So I think, you know, like you, as I grew up in Australia, you grew up in America. And, you know, but the society is still the same. The boundaries around women are the same. And even though culturally in different countries, it's framed in a different way, the message is always very clear and always the same, in that women are not celebrated in the same way that men are. Little girls are told to be, you know, don't get dirty, don't play in the mud, don't jump fences, don't hang upside down on the monkey bar, someone might see your underwear, don't, you know what I mean? So there's this constant messaging, you know, very conscious and unconscious, but it's loud. It's loud and clear that women should keep their place. And society and the patriarchal view is that our place is actually somewhere beneath them. Now, I'm not saying that that's every single person who believes that, not, you know, but this is the narrative that we're raised with. We see it in schools. We see it in the workplace. We see it everywhere. We're surrounded by it. And we see it in the media. We see it in social media. And then what happens A, women buy into it because we don't know any different. But as we get older, so as we hit 40 and then 50 and beyond, that it becomes even worse, because then we're expected to conform to, you can't wear your hair like that. You're over 50. You can't, why are you wearing those clothes? You're over 40. And so the messaging gets even more intense in a different way. You should be invisible. Why are you wearing loud and bright clothes? Why are you dyeing your hair? Why do you have like long nails and whatever? And so the narrative around that, you know, is so strong for women. And it really is, and I'm starting to see sort of very slowly, slowly, a collective change in the world where women are starting to sort of take back that power and say, you don't have the right to tell me how I can dress. You don't have the right to tell me what I can say. And when we're just talking about very superficial stuff here, obviously, right. But let's talk about stuff like, you know, female sexuality, because God forbid you'd be talking about that in public out loud. And the shaming that some authors, podcasters, writers, whoever, media people get when they dare to actually explore that is quite horrendous. And part of that is really a societal view of, we own your bodies, we own your autonomy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that that's so much of why women have been so suppressed and repressed, right?
Oh, yeah.
Throughout the years. And that is that, whether it was an unspoken agreement or whether it was actually quite spoken, quite contractual, that there are stipulations for our being given permission to be part of the society outside of the home. And I'm so happy to hear that you are seeing dramatic change in that regard. And, you know, I know for myself, if I look at my daughter, for instance, I'm so thrilled that she's so capable of expressing herself and expressing her truth. And I see it in my granddaughters, right? Very opinionated and not shy in the least about sharing them. And it's so funny, because of my own upbringing, I know initially I may feel like I might be a little taken aback by it, right? And then there's that part of me inside that is just laughing and thinking, this is the most marvelous thing in the world. But I think about myself, if I have that initial reaction, and I consider myself to be pretty aware, right? And pretty consciously engaged.
Oh, yeah.
I can imagine what it's like for some others who have not experienced sort of claiming their freedom as I have. You know, I liberated myself, but it's something, Sandy, that I'm finding is a journey, and it is a constant journey. I am constantly liberating myself from belief systems, from ideals, from expectations of others, from conformity. I mean, there are so many. It's like a full-time job.
I 100% agree with you on that. I think it is a journey, you know, and I guess my journey, you say about being in recovery from being a good girl. You know, I was divorced at 41, and, you know, from that day, I think I've had more growth in that time than ever before. And I continue to, and every day and every week and every month and every year is such a journey, such a journey. And I love that you raised this point about you're continuing to liberate yourself from different thought patterns, from different expectations of people and their expectations of you I guess, and how we deal with that as women, because a lot of women are people pleasers and we're raised to be people pleasers.
Oh my goodness, yes.
Right. And so we're so afraid to rock the boat by just being ourselves. Like I'm on this journey, but why are you on this journey? There's a constant sort of questioning from those around us as well. So it's not just our expectations of others, but it's navigating the expectations we have on ourselves and the expectations that others view us. So, you know, especially when you add that layer of perhaps motherhood to women, and not every woman obviously is a mother, nor does every woman want to be, but it's that there is this kind of then sacred goddess kind of thing that comes into play, and this societal expectation that as mothers we are meant to behave in a certain way, we are meant to hold certain views, we are meant to sacrifice all parts of ourselves to raise other human beings, and that's a whole other level. And generally that's what women do. And yeah. So when we don't fit into the norm of all the other mums, perhaps when you're picking up your children from school or whatever, you know, again, there's all of this layering of judgment that happens on people. And that's a really good point that we should talk about too, is the judgment, yes, of society on women, but what I find really difficult is the judgment of women against other women and the choices that we make. And how that binds us as well.
Yeah, and it was actually something that was going through my mind as well. You know, how cruel we can be to each other. And, you know, I think that there's been a lot of studies, right, that have been done, particularly with young girls and right around that 12, 13-year-old spectrum where they can be vicious. Absolutely vicious. And of course, there's some of it that is probably biological, right? And is connected to our survival instincts. And, you know, think about at that time when the biology kicks in and the hormones kick in and you know, you have these instincts that have you wanting to procreate, right? And carry on the human race. And so there clearly was a time where maybe women had to compete for men in that way. But I know for myself that there is still this level of competition that I see even aside from that age range. And the competition is on a number of different levels and sort of manifests in different ways, but it's there nonetheless. And I think you're right. It comes across as judgment and as, you know, this one-upmanship very often, but underlying all of that, I can't help but think that there is still this desire, this need, and this yearning for true sisterhood. And we just don't know how to get there.
Absolutely. And while you were talking about that, I was just, you know, thinking about the ways in which that does manifest. You're 100% right. I believe one of the biggest hindrances to this, you know, what we're talking about as true sisterhood is this competitive nature that we view as women, because I guess when we look historically, even now, you know, in the States, we're looking at, you know, Vice President Kamala Harris as being the first.
Yeah,
the first female vice president, the first woman of color as the vice president, the yeah. first vice president that has an Asian American background. So all these firsts. And so because we're still seeing in this day and age, in 2020, what we're seeing is so many women, when they achieve something, they're the first or they're rare or there's only been 5 of them or 10 of them. And so that kind of creates a competitiveness, I think, within women as well, because we're so fighting for that place at the table that men have always enjoyed. Whether it be in politics or religion or, you know, in schools or in corporate businesses, wherever it may be, women are still fighting for that seat at the table. And while we do and have come a long way in terms of female leadership, you know, in Australia, there's a great example. We had our very first female Prime Minister in Julia Gillard a number of years ago. Mm-hmm. And the chaos that ensued because there was a woman sitting in the driver's seat was insane. So to watch the way that male politicians treated her with such viciousness in a way they would not treat each other, but also to see public opinion, not just men, and herein lies my point, was women and how she was judged not for her leadership, but for what she was wearing. For the fact that she had a partner, a male partner, but she wasn't married to him, for the fact that she didn't have children. Like it was just kind of all these things that male politicians and former leaders of this country are not judged by. The standards for women are so much higher, and it's not just men who are judging them. It's actually other women judging them. You know, and I've seen it already with, you know, with your glorious new VP, people actually asking, you know, talking about, on the news, about what she was wearing that day. What color was her suit? What? Like, the only time I ever saw that, you know, talking about what men were wearing in your country, like watching the American news, was, of course, Obama, when he came out wearing a tan suit. And, you know, this is what I mean. I think the women are held to a much higher standard. And unfortunately, it trickles down, not just in the media, it trickles down into our lives as well. So for myself, I'm so, so blessed to have this extraordinary group of women that I grew up with from high school. And we are still friends to this day. And in fact, we're catching up for Christmas in a couple of weeks, which is fantastic, with our partners. And they're strong, brilliant, intelligent women, all in their own right, but they're all radically different from one another. And from me, we're all very different personalities, but we are all strong. And within that, when I look at that, to navigate that friendship from high school to now, you know, when you see that people's feelings get hurt or people get upset when someone else is doing something that was unexpected within that group. And part of that is not that they don't want success for one another or we all don't want each other to rise, because we absolutely do, or these friendships would not have lasted. But it is the you're doing something unexpected and I don't know how to navigate that. And I think as women, we're not taught to communicate about those feelings. And you're right, it does. It can often come out in larger groups, like, say, you know, when you see committees of women, as you say, this kind of one-upmanship of people thinking, oh, you're getting ahead of yourself, or you think you're someone that you're not, or you've got this and I would want it, or how did you get there so quickly, or whatever it may be. And maybe part of this is we need to stay so open and honest with each other and just accept our differences, accept that we are all on a journey and that we're all doing things at different paces. And that really, if we could just help each other, if we could help other women to rise rather than pulling them down, imagine how much better the world would be.
Mm. What a beautiful thought that is.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Sorry, I was just about to say, I don't think it's impossible either, Marcia. I just think it will take time. And I think that women are starting to really listen perhaps more to the views of other women. But I do think when people I won't say indoctrinated, we're all raised in a certain way. And sometimes it's really hard when people are saying to you, the way that you've been raised or the way that you've always thought might not be the right way to think. People feel threatened or challenged by that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I get a lot of that, of course, because I was the one who left my marriage and left a marriage that other people looked upon as being perfect, right? My life yeah. was perfect. My marriage was perfect. Everything was perfect in my life. And seriously, people thought that I went off the deep end. You know, there's something wrong with you. And so what was going through my mind, actually, as you were talking about this vision that you have, right, for women to be able to come together and truly embrace each other and support each other, what sort of jumped in my mind's eye was, well, what does that take? You know, what does that require of us in order to do that? And the first thing I thought of was, number one, of course, we need to accept ourselves, right? So, you know, I teach about self-love. And so as I was thinking about self-love in this perspective, like what really needs to happen? What would be the greatest step towards self-love outside of acceptance? Because just accepting ourselves for who we are is a challenge, right? And it might be too huge of a leap for someone. But what I thought about was, what if we as women stopped justifying our beliefs, our thoughts, why we do things, and why we want to live the kind of life we want to live?
And what a beautiful, beautiful thought that is, Marcy. Because imagine if we could all do that. And partly, I think the reason why it's so difficult for women to, I guess, not judge the world outside them is because we constantly are judging ourselves.
Right.
And I think you hit the nail on the head. I think we all do it, no matter how aware we think we are or you know, how evolved or what journey we're on, you know, and I myself, I'll take ownership for this as well. Every now and then, you know, I get caught. I actually am like stunned sometimes by something that might rear its head. And I think, wow, that's my insecurity. Where, you know, where did this come from? And I have to own it and go, that's my insecurity. My feelings were really hurt by that person. Oh, oops. Maybe it really wasn't about them and maybe it was about me. I'm you know, watching that person and I'm so envious thinking, how did you get that done? Or how did you work that out? Or whatever it may be. I have to stop and own it for myself. That's my insecurity. Yeah. It isn't that, that, you know, really I've got to look at, is it the outside world or is it myself? And I think that you're right, this whole journey of self-love, and it's a difficult journey for women, I think, for all of us. It's a constant, as you rightly said, it's a constant journey of reinventing ourselves, of giving ourselves permission to be who we want to be and to accept ourselves for exactly who we are. But as women, we're so judgmental of ourselves, about our weight, about our lives, about how we do everything. I mean, you know, I see women berate themselves in jest. You know, they use it jest to berate themselves about a number of things. Oh, look at me, I'm mother of the year because I stuffed this up, or whatever it may be. But I do see that sort of narrative comes up a lot in female groups, especially online. And you realize that this is what we do to ourselves. We are our own worst enemy. We beat ourselves up. And in doing so, and in feeling, and in not loving ourselves, it's really difficult then to not cast an eye over someone else.
And I think that whole system of, you know, needing to justify to ourselves is exactly what sabotages our ability to love ourselves. You know, how often do we have those, that inner dialogue, right? Where we are justifying what we said, what we did, why that person hurt us, like you said, all of those things, and creating this immediate separation between us and the rest of the world. And how it would be if we could start to recognize when we're in that pattern of even believing that we need to justify anything. Why would we need to justify who we are, what we're thinking, what we're doing? Why?
And I think that comes back to the whole people pleasing. You know, we justify something that we're doing, and we've all done it, you know, and we continue to do it as women. So people, a great example of this is when I decided that I was starting a podcast, and I had friends, some of whom were women. I did have female people in my life who said, "Why on earth would you want to do that? Oh, you, Sandy, you have all these crazy ideas." But for me, like, I've just kind of learned to smile at that, because guess what? I do have a lot of crazy ideas, but they're good crazy. And I think that I don't think it's so crazy to have a platform to amplify the voices of other women, for example. But, you know, I think that if I wasn't, and believe me, I have insecurities too, but if I wasn't as secure as I am, I probably wouldn't do half the things I do. And herein lies the problem for a lot of us, I think. But when you talk about true sisterhood, I think one of the things about all of that as well is learning to accept the differences of other women. So having amazing women in your life from different backgrounds with different viewpoints, I think, is really important. And I think having grown up with a group of women who are exactly like that, who love you, who don't always agree with you, who get annoyed with you and vice versa, but at the end of the day, who love you, like genuinely love you, and would drop everything to help you as you would them. That is really what sisterhood is about. So it's not about, oh, we all must be the same. We're all, you know, we've all got the same viewpoints and the same political views and the same religious views and the same whatever. You know, I think the important thing for women as a whole, collectively, is for all of us to start to learn to not just accept the differences, but embrace the differences of other women and understand what they can bring to the table.
And I think maybe, Sandy, it comes down to something you said right in the very beginning, and that is about creating a safe space, because we come back to the same place. In our hearts, we are yearning to be loved by other women.
I agree. And to be, and when we say the word love, like to be loved, but to be loved fully, like that means we have to be accepted for who we are. Right. So I think for women, there is a yearning to be loved, to be accepted. And I think women, all of us as women, so can take things quite personally. We want to be accepted, and we want to be, you know, as you say, we want to feel safe in the relationships that we build, and that includes friendships, which become sisters, who become, you know, like, I think that's what a lot of people yearn for. And while I was lucky to have it growing up, I've met so many women who do not have close female friendships in their life. And I think there you see in them that yearning and that desire to have it, and almost like them trying to figure out, how do I build that? How do I build that outside of my own life? How do I bring women into my life?
Which is, I think, actually sort of a metamorphosis that we're seeing in our society as women, because I can't help but think that the whole disassociation with other women actually comes from that patriarchal society, right? Where women were not encouraged to gather as women. Why? Because we become dangerous. When we get together, we're dangerous. We share all these crazy ideas, and suddenly this one doesn't want to bake anymore, and that one doesn't want to cook on Sundays anymore, and this one, and all of this rebellion took place, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I think this whole resurgence of our need to connect heart to heart is indeed a metamorphosis. It is a coming of a new age of women. I remember a number of years ago, and I'm going to have to see if I can find it. I wrote a poem, and it was the title was "We the Daughters of the Last Generation." And I know for myself, like, my life is so different from my mother's. My daughter's life is so different from the life that I had at her age, right? And I'm certain that my granddaughters will. But I come back to this place over and over and over again, how we have suffered terribly by not being in sisterhood. Because we, as women, we need it. We are not men. We are not content to just be out there, right, in the world, in the workforce, and coming home to the nest sort of a scenario every single day. We need other women. We are the connectors of the world. So how can we not be connected?
I agree. Yeah.
And so I know for myself, I had gotten off of the tram at Victoria Gardens. And I remember walking over the bridge, Sandy, and looking down. And I'm actually getting teary-eyed because I can remember the feeling I had. Number one, of we were making history. That was number one. Number two, I had such a sense of pride, sheer pride in the courage of every woman who showed up that day. And then there were men who were there applauding us. It was the most incredible experience. And I'm telling you, it was life-changing for me because I had never really felt that that sensation before of being applauded by men for standing up, for having a voice, for coming together, for linking our arms, right? And really just owning who we were and our power and what we wanted in this world and how we wanted this world to accept us, to love us, and to support us. It was monumental.
Oh yeah, like just you talking about it then, I've actually got goosebumps on my arms because I know that moment that you were talking about where men were, you know, there were so many men there. And obviously there were, you know, the women way outweighed the number of men, but the men that were there were fully, fully there and engaged and listening to the speakers and applauding them. And, you know, I think in that moment, I did feel like I was a little part of history. Yeah. I had such a strong-willed mother who didn't feel particularly maternal, to be honest. She just didn't. But she was a rebel in her younger days, and she was arrested several times for protesting to bring the boys home from Vietnam and protesting for women's rights, can you believe it, in the 70s, in solidarity with her American sisters, she used to say, and all of those things. And that particular day that you were talking about, as it turned out that, you know, there were photographers, there were people, and I was with a friend, Carly Finlay, who was actually one of the speakers. And I was holding, someone handed me a flag, and I was holding this flag, and I was with Carly leading women across the bridge, and that photo ended up in the paper. And I almost felt like I felt such a sense of pride, but I was thinking about my mum and thinking how proud she would have been, that it's almost like handing over the banner, like, you know, it's handing over the torch. But I will say that particular year, and I think it's so important to acknowledge that so many younger women in our society had come forward at that time were talking about Me Too, were talking about their Me Too stories. And it was like a surge in the world happened. It was like all of a sudden that unlocked such a powerful gate. It was like a floodgate opened for so many women to say, oh, wow, I've got a story like that too. And that it became okay and safe to talk about your stories, to talk about your pain, to talk about the things as women that we have gone through. And, you know, we've got to take our hats off to, you know, the women who coined that phrase and the celebrities who came out and told their stories, because they, in doing so, what they did was create a safe space for every other woman to open, to just talk about the stories.
And to come out of secrecy.
Yeah.
There is nothing more, you know, corrosive to the sense of self than the belief that you have to live in secrecy and that fear.
So true. And unfortunately, you know, through, you know, years and years and years and years and years of conditioning, that's what women are taught as well. Don't talk about it. Put it on, sweep it under the carpet. Put it back in the cupboard. Let's not talk about it. And now this kind of, this is why I'm seeing such a change, I think, is that women are able, I think, to show some vulnerability. Now, not everyone is going to want to do that on a public platform, and that's okay. That's absolutely okay. But I think, and I like to believe that because of this, more and more women are at least reaching out to each other and telling their stories and talking about it. And because when you start to talk about your stories, then you start to heal. You know, you find ways to start to heal. But as you say, it's the swallowing those stories. It's the hiding the stories. It's the being veiled in secrecy. And here's another thing that society does to women. It causes this sense of shame. And so, you know, especially women who have been victims of trauma, assault, violence, are taught that if they talk about it, it's their shame. Not the perpetrator, but their shame. And in hiding those things, we dull the you know, the light in women. We dull it.
Yeah. Mm.
And we don't give them then a platform to heal. And healing's so important because, as you say, and this comes back to your point, unless we can love ourselves, we can't fully give of ourselves out there either.
That's correct. You cannot give what you don't have. And you cannot give what you are ashamed of having.
Very true. Yep. And that's what I was talking before about. So I think I raised it before about sexuality, female sexuality. Mm. I think it's really fascinating to me, as I said, how other women can sometimes get really offended by that. And you realize that this is the oppression, right? This is what we're taught, that it's shameful to love our bodies. And especially if you're a woman whose body type doesn't fit into what society tells you is beautiful or perfect, it's almost like an act of rebellion to love your own body and to feel comfortable in your own body and to feel comfortable if you're curvy or you've got weight on or you're whatever. It's an act of rebellion, I think, for people in the disability sector to love their bodies and to not like hide themselves. I think, and it's not just in the disability sector, there's so many different sectors, but I think I'm starting to see a shift in that with the young, you know, younger generations following us and this whole movement of body positivity, which is a really beautiful thing and something I certainly didn't have growing up.
Right. No, I agree. Well, I can't believe I have to say this, but we've really come to the end of our time together. And all I can say, I'm going to say two things. Thank God for you, Sandy, and the sisterhood that we share. And thank God for WB40.
Mm.
And giving women all around the world the opportunity to use their voice and share their gifts and talents and coming together as a true sisterhood. So thank you so very much for everything that you are doing.
Oh, Marcy, I'm so honored that you asked me to be on your podcast. And I will say to everyone, you have asked me, you know, as you say, this is a long time coming, and it's just sort of perfect timing. So I'm so grateful and really honored to be here with you today as well. But again, on a personal level, I love you dearly. I thank you for your friendship and your openness and your honesty. And I absolutely love what you are doing with your platform as well, which is building love and openness and talking about grace and creating a place for people to share that as well. And I think that that's so vital. So I love you, Marcy, with all of my heart. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandy, and I love you too so very much. And before we go, please tell our audience, how can they reach you?
Sure. Thank you, Marcy. So WB40, Women Beyond 40, they can go to wb40.com. And they can also listen or watch The Good Girl Confessional. Is available on all of your favorite podcast outlets. And we are on YouTube as well, The Good Girl Confessional.
I love it so much. Oh, anyway, thank you everyone for being here. Thank you, Sandy. Of course, anyone who would like to reach out to me, you can do so at heartshiftcoach.com. And I want to just invite everyone also that there's a brand new freebie on my website, a lovely little ebook called Love is in the Air.
Oh, that's beautiful.
So, yeah, I invite everyone to tune in there. It's a great little book because I sort of changed my format a bit and I ask you some very probing questions. So enjoy that. And thank you so much for being here, everyone who's tuning in and who will tune in months, years to come. And just know how much that we appreciate you and your giving us your precious time and focus today. So love to you all, and I look forward to our next time together. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone.